from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm Lily Jamali in San Francisco.
And I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles. There are new warnings about planned blackouts this morning. PG&E announced last night it's considering turning off the power to customers in parts of the North Bay and the Sierra foothills, that to prevent its equipment from igniting fires. It's because of dry conditions and high winds predicted for midweek. PG&E says the shutoffs should be significantly smaller than the ones earlier this month. And the latest word from the utility? Get used to these warnings.
That's right, Saul. PG&E's CEO Bill Johnson revealed this on Friday at an emergency hearing called by the California Public Utilities Commission, saying that these shutoffs will be a regular thing for the next decade. They say they need that time to harden their electrical grid, although later on in the hearing, Johnson appeared to hedge a bit. So when I and other reporters caught up with him outside that hearing here in San Francisco, I asked him about it. You'll hear him mention AB 1054. Just a reminder, that's the law passed this summer to shore up the finances of our state's utilities.
You're now using a decade as the framework for which we might be seeing these shutoffs continue. Why did you feel compelled to walk that framework, that decade framework, back in there later in the session?
No, I wasn't walking it back. I was explaining it, and I realized I could have explained it better. So what I was trying to say is 10 years, every year less, narrower scope, but the risk is growing at the same time. So at the time we're trying to shrink it, it's growing, and I think it'll take time. We have two sort of 8 to 10 year programs. The wildfire fund in AB 1054 is a 10-year fund. And so I think the expectation generally in the state is on that time frame, we should be able to get away from this entirely. That's what I was trying to say.
Just following up on that, if I might, should you have been more surgical with the shutoffs last week?
We were surgical. You know, when you looked at the initial scope, it was 3.5 million people. When you looked at the second scope, it was 2.5, and then it was 1.5, and we got it down to 730,000. This was a very widespread wind event. The National Weather Service said this is the biggest wind event since October of 2017, and we know what happened in October of 2017. So I think we got the scope right.
So you wouldn't change anything?
I might start some of the shutoffs later. There's some tweaking around the edges. I think that scope was right where it needed to be, given what we knew and our tools.
People are going to be surprised to hear you say that.
Yes. I was in the middle of the decision. I watched the decision. I saw the data unfold. I saw the meteorology. I'm confident that was the right scope.
I have to ask you, because it comes up in so many of my conversations with Californians about bonuses or what you call incentive payments. Are you continuing to lobby for those, or can I assure Californians now that that is off the table?
They're not bonuses. They're incentive payments. I think the question is moot since they haven't been approved by the court. You know, it's very common for every utility in the country to have these. And so I'm not quite sure what we'll do next, but it won't be anything anytime soon. Our goal over the next 10 years is to eliminate these kind of PSPS events. It will take us some time to do that. The risk increases every year, as does our efforts to improve at it. And so we will do a number of things, adopt new technologies, but our goal is to have great service, continuous service here in California. We're doing everything we can to make that happen.
Why are you now floating the idea of having the state be involved in the implementation of these shutoffs?
Well, I'm not floating the idea. I'm floating the idea of having a conversation about this. And the reason is, for an event like this to really work well, the public has to have confidence in the decision making. And so I heard a lot of commentary that people didn't have confidence in us making this decision. I just want to make sure, because if people don't believe you're actually going to do it or don't believe it's a real thing, they won't take care of the safety aspect. So I just think that's worth a conversation. I'm glad to keep the responsibility. I think we did a good job of making that call in this case. But my main interest in all this is safety. And if that helps with safety, I think we should talk about it.
The interpretation, of course, is that you're trying to push liability off of the corporation and onto the state.
That's not my interpretation.
That's the interpretation we heard from the public comment.
Well, I'm certainly not trying to do that. And I think I said in my comments in there, this had nothing to do with any of that other than public confidence leading to greater public safety.
I have to ask you, because it comes up in so many of my conversations with Californians about bonuses or what you call incentive payments, are you continuing to lobby for those, or can I assure Californians now that that is off the table?
They're not bonuses, they're incentive payments. I think the question is moot since they haven't been approved by the court. You know, it's very common for every utility in the country to have these. And so I'm not quite sure what we'll do next, but it won't be anything anytime soon.
Let's turn now to California's cannabis economy. When the state legalized the recreational use of marijuana, it was supposed to shrink California's illicit cannabis trade. But the marijuana black market here continues to be larger than the legal one. One culprit blamed for that is Weed Maps, the online marketplace that connects cannabis customers with dispensaries and delivery services. The state accuses Weed Maps of selling ads to illegal pot shops, and the Bureau of Cannabis Control has sent a cease and desist order. Weed Maps promises it'll have black market vendors off its site by the end of the year. I talked about that issue with Chris Beals, the CEO of Weed Maps. I asked him to respond to critics who say the site's users aren't licensed.
In most jurisdictions, no, they're wrong.
And how about California?
In California, yeah. I mean, in the sense that there's a broad number of people on the platform, and at the end of the year, we'll be rolling on the policy that if you don't have a license number, you can't maintain a listing or advertise a listing.
How many unlicensed distributors or vendors, dispensaries are on your site now in California?
I mean, at this point, we would estimate it's probably hundreds. I mean, since the beginning of the year, we've had a reduction in almost 2,000 listings, I think, in the state of California, and we'd estimate the vast majority of those are people who are moving off into the digital ether.
But why? Why so long after the legalization of recreational cannabis? Why don't you have the gates up so those people aren't on your site?
Well, until one thing that's not covered a lot is until the beginning of this year, medical cooperatives and the Prop 215 collectives continued to be grandfathered in and allowed to operate. And so I think sort of our working assumption was that licensing, and frankly it's a bottleneck of local licensing, would pick up steam and these businesses would be given licenses because that was the promise of Prop 64. And frankly, we were caught a little bit flat-footed when that sort of increase in licensing didn't come to pass. And so I think at this point, we've announced that if you don't have a license or that field is not filled in, you're going to come off the site. We're trying to give people a chance to react to that, and then we're sort of dropping that deadline at the end of the year.
Looking ahead, you know, we're almost at the brink of the second year anniversary of legalized cannabis in the state. What is it that you weren't expecting that's happened?
You know, I think the core piece is the complete failure of cities and counties to actually move forward with the voter mandate to issue licenses. So local control was the grand compromise in Prop 64, where local governments could decide whether to license or not license. And I think the prevailing thought at the time was that if the majority of residents in a city or county voted yes, the city or county would then move forward with licensing. The reality has been the complete opposite. About 75% of cities and counties have no cannabis licensing, and as a result, California, if we think about retail or other license types per capita, has one of the worst ratios in the entire country. And I think correspondingly, it's why we're seeing so much of our growth come outside of California. I mean, at this point, looking at a market like Oklahoma or Maryland or where Florida's moving, these markets have, I think, far more growth to them, far more size, far more access than anything we're seeing in the vast majority of California.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, that was Weed Map CEO Chris Beals. By the way, right after we recorded that interview with Beals, Weed Maps announced it was laying off nearly 100 employees. And finally, Los Angeles has long been known as a city where the car is king and the needs of pedestrians and cyclists can be ignored. But things are changing in LA. And over the weekend, the city's Department of Transportation conducted its first ever count of people who walk and bike on LA streets. That is a way to improve safety. KCRW's Avishai Artsy hit the streets to learn more.
It's a sunny day on Venice Boulevard in LA's west side. Fabian Corlier rolls by on his bike, which he uses to get to work and to his karate class.
It's healthier. It's not very safe. But yeah, I try to use a lot of reflective materials.
Corlier is hinting that LA streets can still be dangerous for cyclists and pedestrians, something that the city wants to change.
Walking, biking, helmet use, skateboards, you name it, we're trying to count it.
Mackenzie Racy works at the LA Department of Transportation, or DOT, but is here as a volunteer. She's one of 60 or so volunteers placed at streets across the city to count everyone not using a car. People like Joanne Ahn, who says she prefers walking over driving.
Because traffic is terrible, and I like to be outdoors.
A couple years ago, the city added parking-protected bike lanes and lighted crosswalks on this stretch of Venice Boulevard. Similar projects are happening around LA. Right now, the city estimates around 15% of trips in LA are done by walking, biking, or public transit. Officials want to more than double that over the next 6 years.
And the count is really our best way of measuring how close we are to meeting those goals.
Lily O'Brien is with the LA DOT. Similar counts have been conducted from San Francisco to San Diego. In LA, nonprofits have done occasional counts, but the DOT wants them to happen more often and to include street cameras and motion sensors to give a fuller picture of how the city's 4 million people get around. For the California Report, I'm Avishai Artsy in Los Angeles.
Support for the California Report comes from Strauss Family Creamery, producing 100% organic milk in reusable glass bottles for more than 25 years, keeping 500,000 pounds of milk containers out of landfills every year. StraussFamilyCreamery.com. Energy Upgrade California, urging Californians to keep it golden by saving energy through simple acts like unplugging unused devices. EnergyUpgradeCalifornia.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
Within the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary is the world's largest octopus nursery. It was found about a year ago off the California coast between Santa Cruz and Monterey. KAZU's Erica Mahoney spoke with scientists who study this octopus garden while they were out at sea.
The deep sea garden is a gathering place for hundreds of female octopuses to lay and take care of their eggs. The researchers had just completed a 35-hour study of the octopus garden when I connected with them at sea. Chad King is lead scientist on the cruise and a research specialist with the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary.
But we're going 2 miles deep. It's almost freezing down there. It's clearly a place humans can't go scuba diving.
So they rely on two underwater robots operated from a boat called the Nautilus, which is owned by the nonprofit Ocean Exploration Trust. King says these robots work together to collect samples and capture video. Here they are looking at live footage of the octopus garden.
Zoom in there.
Footage shows hundreds of lavender-colored octopuses nestled among the rocks, a few clinging to the robots. Scientists on board MC along.
Both of the octopus in the lower left of our screen have moved enough that we can see their egg capsules under them.
It's called an octopus garden, in part because of the Beatles song, and because octopuses discard the shells from the animals they've eaten, building what looks like an underwater garden. King says the cluster is a nursery of sorts for over 1,000 female octopuses who are brooding.
So brooding is essentially taking care of their eggs. It's almost like a bird in a nest, nesting their eggs. So they protect them because these eggs most likely would be preyed upon by shrimp and other creatures.
He says they're still figuring out why the octopuses are here. King thinks it might have something to do with warmer water seeping out of the seafloor. That might speed up the development of the octopus babies, or perhaps keep the eggs clean. All questions scientists want to answer as they study the garden. But for now, only the octopuses know. For the California Report, I'm Erica Mahoney in Monterey.
And although the expedition has wrapped up, you can still see video of the octopuses on NautilusLive.org.
And before we go, good news for soccer fans in Sacramento. Later this morning, Major League Soccer is expected to announce the city is getting the league's 29th franchise. The team, Republic FC, will play in a new downtown stadium starting in 2022.
And that's today's California Report. I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles.
And I'm Lily Jamali in San Francisco. Thank you for listening.